You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Locked On Mets is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Now, on today's show, I will discuss the introductory press conference of Max Scherzer in the first segment. Then we will dive in to the introductory press conferences for Eduardo Escobar, Mark Canha, and Starling Marte. How are those guys going to fit with the Mets moving forward? And then lastly, in the final segment today, we got to talk about Marcus Stroman no longer being a New York Met. Ended up being a short-lived run with the team as he has signed a new deal with the Chicago Cubs. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at Finkelstein Ryan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at justbaseball.com. So Max Scherzer was introduced to the media, and I don't love the Zoom press conference. Haven't always been a fan of that, especially when you look back at previous free agent signings of the past, where you get that, you know, the jersey gets put on over the dress shirt and they put the hat on and you have actual professional cameras shooting the whole thing with good microphone setups. It's a little bit better than Max Scherzer and Scott Boras sitting outside of a country club with what seemed like some terrible weather. It's like a wind tunnel with some rain, and it was just a little bit cheap looking when it came to a player that just signed for $43.3 million a year, a $130 million contract. Scott Boras representing all of the best players in baseball. You would have thought they could have at least found a conference room somewhere, but I digress on that small note. Some of my bigger takeaways from the press conference. First, we can't ignore the money, right? I think over the weekend, when I didn't think that this was at all possible, I had tweeted something out about how if Max Scherzer signs with the Mets, he should just sit down in front of the camera and said, "Hey, I took the most money. That's why I'm here," and then walked off. Now, when I said that, again, did not think at all that this was a realistic possibility. So I was very curious now to actually hear what he had to say. To hear why he chose the Mets outside of the 130 million reasons that Steve Cohen gave him to choose the Mets. And with that money, though, I want to touch on it really quick. It would have been irresponsible for Max Scherzer to have not taken the Mets offer when it was considerably higher than anything else he was going to get on the market. Not that he's not worth all that money. I have been very clear that whatever it took to get Max Scherzer on this roster, hats off to Steve Cohen, Billy Epler getting the job done. It's not an overpay when he's the best pitcher in baseball since, you know, whatever it was, 2009 when he started being awesome. I mean, this guy has been so good. He's so consistent. I do not at all want to categorize it as an overpay, but it did set a bar. It did set a precedent that has never been seen before of an average annual salary at $43.3 million. So that is very significant. And with Max Scherzer being one of the key figures in the MLBPA, one of Scott Boras's prized clients, he had to take the most money that was on the table. And he did talk not necessarily about having to take the money, but he did talk about moving the bar for the next player and how he's always conscious of the guys that came before him that allowed him to make what he makes, and that he had to, or he takes a responsibility in moving that line along. So that is certainly something that was talked about a bit. And also, you get that sense between, you know, seeing Max Scherzer and Scott Boras and the way they were talking about that clear discontent between the players and the owners. Max Scherzer talked about a war chest for some of the lesser wage guys in case this has to be an extended lockout to be able to take care of the players in the minor leagues, the players who aren't making the money of the veterans. So that is certainly a scary thought when you have Scott Boras sitting there and Max Scherzer is referencing a war chest. It's war. It is war between the players and the owners. That is definitely not something that we want to think about as the CBA just expired and now we're in this lockout. Personally, I'm hoping that this is just a month, maybe 6 weeks. They carry us through the holidays. They're talking behind the scenes. And then, hey, January 15th, 16th, they come to terms with a new deal. We get another month of normal offseason and free agency and all that good stuff. And then the pitchers and catchers report, and we have no problems. But considering their demeanor in this meeting with Boris and Scherzer, I'm nervous about how long this is going to be. But let's focus on the positives, and let's talk about Max Scherzer and what he's going to bring to the Mets and why he chose the Mets. He was very clear that it was refreshing to see Steve Cohen call him up and express that all-in mentality to win right now. And that is something that intrigued him. And the more Scherzer talked, the more you could tell he has bought into this situation. It's more than just $130 million. He talked about welcoming the opportunity to pitch with Jacob deGrom and this idea they could do great things together, which of course I've been preaching about on this show for the past week here, because that is the most amazing 1-2 punch you can even put together right now in the game. So that is really exciting to think about. He talked about this, you know, he talked about performing on his last contract and how he provided surplus value for the Nationals, and he really relished the opportunity to live up to a contract, the pressure of a contract. And I think that's going to carry over, as he mentioned, with this contract. He welcomes that pressure of living up to a big deal. And now this is a monster deal that he has to live up to, but he is looking forward to doing just that. He is absolutely a leader. That's something Billy Epler was talking about as the Mets introduced him, that he is an internal leader, as I believe the phrasing that Epler used, someone who leads by example. So that is something that the Mets are getting here that is, you know, crucial to what they're trying to build out moving forward. Here's the interesting thing for me. Max Scherzer is one of the few pitchers in baseball that can still teach Jacob deGrom something. Just think about that. One of the few left where deGrom can pick his brain, and this is a guy who has seen it all, done it all, that can make deGrom even better. And how do you get better than being the best? But that's where we are, and that's what he can bring to this team. Another thing that was mentioned was the dead arm that Max Scherzer had during the playoffs. He says the first time he's experienced something like that, usually when he tells his manager he can go, he always has been able to go. And he was very steadfast on that, that throughout his career, he's always been the guy to take the ball whenever he's needed. And I mean, we can tell through the innings pitch, the durability, everything we've seen from him. But the reason that he thinks he got the dead arm is because the Dodgers were being really cautious with innings pitched, sometimes having a six-man rotation. And that, he thinks, ended up hurting his arm, where he did not have the workload required so that he could have the ability late in October to still have it and be able to pitch the same way he pitched in 2019 with the Nationals when he was relied on as that horse that he is. So that is music to your ears as a Mets fan, because Max Scherzer saying, don't hold me back. I want to throw every 5 days. I want to go deep in games. I want to eat innings. And when we're talking about the New York Mets and their bullpen next year and their starting rotation, having a horse in front of your rotation like that with DeGrom, that is going to mean so much. One of the reasons why the Mets collapsed in that second half without Jacob DeGrom is because you didn't have that stopper every fifth day. And even this past season, as excellent as DeGrom was, he dealt with so many of those ticky-tack injuries that at times he had to be protected a lot, and he wasn't allowed to go deep in the game. So to have a pitcher like Scherzer, who really emphasized the work he puts into his body, that this is something that he really relishes in the offseason as a time to get stronger, to make himself the best athlete he can be, that is just going to lessen the burden on DeGrom and also lessen the burden on the bullpen and the rest of the rotation when you have that type of a horse in front of your rotation to lead you. So all of these different things come together, and I think the Max Scherzer introductory press conference was the promise of a really bright future for this team. And this is similar to me looking back to the Pedro Martinez signing, to getting Mike Piazza, even Keith Hernandez when they got him. It's just this first step in what feels like the Mets turning the page into a new era of baseball. Last year, Francisco Lindor, maybe that was the first piece, but because he didn't have the best year and because this team wasn't that good, this is hopefully the start of something even better. And getting a player like Max Scherzer, that opens the door to make the New York Mets an attractive free agent destination for all players. And certainly the Mets have gotten a pretty good coup so far with those other three players they signed, but Scherzer is just such a difference maker. You just can't say enough about what he's going to bring to this team. This is by far the best pitcher the Mets could have added this offseason. And to see him excited to be a Met, to see him relishing this opportunity, to think about what him and DeGrom are going to do together, I just hope this lockout ends soon because we want to see them on schedule, spring training on time. Let's see Scherzer in the blue and orange jersey throwing a spring training start, and let's get excited for the 2022 season. But we also have three new other players to discuss: Mark Canha, Eduardo Escobar, and Starling Marte. They also met with the media today, and I will go through what we learned from their press conference as well in just a minute. BetOnline has you covered all season with more props, odds, and lines available than ever before as the football season continues to march towards the playoffs. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the sports action this season. Head to their new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit just by using the promo code LOCKEDON. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. Along with introducing Max Scherzer to the media on Wednesday, the Mets also had a Zoom press conference for Mark Canha, Eduardo Escobar, and Starling Marte. They had to get all of this in before that CBA expired because then the players, I guess, had to crawl into some hole somewhere. They're not allowed to be seen anymore. It's a lockout. All operation between team and player must end as we get through what's going to be a really rough period for baseball. Hopefully not a long one, but when it comes to what we learned from this other press conference, it's hard to take too much from these press conferences. I'm going to be honest. I was sitting there watching it. I was trying to find little tidbits to share. And I'll be honest, at a certain point, it gets monotonous. And I even fell asleep. I'll be completely honest. At one point, I was dozing off because it gets a little boring. But there was some key takeaways, and I watched it back, and some things that I do want to address and go through here. So the first thing is that Billy Epler raved about these being great clubhouse guys. And when you think about the Mets team last year, there just wasn't a ton of veteran leadership. You had James McCann as somewhat of a veteran leader, I guess, just based on his age and how long he's been playing the game. You had Kevin Pillar, probably the elder statesman on that team. But with Kevin Pillar, he can't really be the type of leader these guys are going to be because on the field, he just doesn't produce anymore. I mean, we all respect Kevin Pillar for what he did after he got hit in the face, the way he came back so quick, what that meant, you know, showcasing his character and who he is as a person, and nothing but respect for Kevin Pillar in that regard. But as a baseball player at this stage in his career, I mean, we saw it. He couldn't hit anymore. And there was weeks where he was dragging the lineup down. And so you need players that can not only lead as a veteran, but also lead by example on the field. And that's what these three guys can do for the Mets. And also Max Scherzer, one of the best leaders in the game and one of the best at leading by example for a pitching staff. It doesn't get any better than that. So that is clearly a big thing the Mets just added, a ton of veteran leadership. And that's going to help some of these young guys come up. They all talked about being able to help a young guy when they need to learn something new or to pick their brains and get through some of the rough things that you'll go through throughout a season. So all of that is great for the New York Mets. My maybe biggest takeaway, or maybe the most interesting thing that came out of this press conference, is that when Starling Marte was asked about why he chose the Mets, you know what the first name was that came out of his mouth? Wasn't Steve Cohen, wasn't Billy Epler, wasn't Jacob DeGrom, wasn't Francisco Lindor or Pete Alonso. No, it's Robinson Cano. That's right. Robinson Cano has finally contributed to the New York Mets. He helped get Starling Marte. Although if you didn't trade for Cano, you might have Jared Kelenic at your center fielder. You might not have needed to give Starling Marte $78 million. But Kelenic didn't have the best rookie year. And Marte, I expect to be better than Kelenic next year. So, hey, it all worked out, right? You do it again, you make the trade, Mets fans. What do you think? Comment below if you would still make that trade. Because, hey, now it brought Marte. Seriously, though, I do think that was an interesting takeaway. All joking aside, Robinson Cano still has some respect among players in the game, even with the two steroid suspensions, especially players from the Dominican Republic like Starling Marte. They are always going to have admiration for Robinson Cano. He has been someone they've all looked up to. So this idea that Robinson Cano won't be welcome in that clubhouse, I think that has been overblown. I think Robinson Cano is going to show up, you know, maybe he has to apologize to a select few guys or you know, stand up in front of the clubhouse and say, I'm sorry. I don't know what's going to happen behind closed doors. But when we get back to just the day-to-day grind of baseball, Robinson Cano will bring veteran leadership. He will. And players like Starling Marte are going to respect Robinson Cano. And I also still think, as I talked about on this show before, and you can find the episode where I talked about why Cano would be good for the Mets next season, I think there's still something left in his bat. And one of the things Billy Epler talked about was the versatility of these guys and having coverage at multiple positions. The way he looks at it is, okay, we have three options at second base, right? You got Eduardo Escobar, Jeff McNeil, Robinson Cano. You got coverage. Really, it's four if you factor in Louis Guillorme as well. Third base, you know, you have coverage because you have Escobar can play there. McNeil can play there. Guillorme can play there. Right now, J.D. Davis can play there unless he's traded. At shortstop, he said we have coverage. Really, because you have Francisco Lindor, who you expect to play 160 games, honestly. And then you have Louis Guillorme as his backup for now. We'll see if the Mets do anything else to address that need for a backup shortstop. Maybe they bring my guy back, VR. But he talked a lot about that coverage. And one of the things about having all of these guys in the outfield now is they have coverage. Mark Canha can play all three spots in the outfield. Starling Marte, Brandon Nimmo, the same thing. So you can move guys around. He also mentioned that he doesn't really care where they're playing as long as they're running down fly balls and making plays out there. And one of the things that I learned from Taylor Blake Ward, who covered the Angels and covered Billy Epler for 5 years, was that Billy Epler sees the game a little bit differently when it comes to how he looks at the field of play. And I think that answer really was indicative of that, that he just looks at covering ground in the outfield, not necessarily the arbitrary left fielder, right fielder, center fielder. One thing I will say, there was a press release about Starling Marte that said bringing defense up the middle. So that initially led me to believe that Marte would be the center fielder. But what Epler said is he has not talked to Nimmo about that yet. They haven't decided anything. And if it was up to me, I still think keeping Nimmo in center field is the best thing for this team, because I think that you can put Starling Marte in right and he's your best option out there. And right field is typically the toughest position to play at Citi Field. So I like Starling Marte, who in my opinion is their best defender out there, playing right with his strong arm, having Nimmo in center and Canha in left. But they can do it however they want to with these three guys, and that is what they are bringing to the table. Another thing, Eduardo Escobar prefers to play third base, but he's open to playing anywhere. And Billy Epler said, I don't know exactly where he's going to play, but he's going to get a lot of at bat. So that tells you that Eduardo Escobar is a starter. I think that has been made clear. And, you know, at the salary alone made you think that Canha and Escobar would be starters, but now we know. So with that said, as you look over this team, this is why I've been saying that they might not make another big splash on a position player. I'm seeing a lot of Mets fans right now that are saying, sign Chris Bryant. And look, I get it. Okay, I want Chris Bryant too. Like I don't want to make it seem like I'm not a fan of Chris Bryant. I spent all of last year campaigning for Chris Bryant trade. So this is not me suddenly changing my tune entirely. It's more trying to bring you what I think is a realistic plan for the Mets. And I don't know how realistic it is to expect them to sign Chris Bryant. Now, We didn't expect him to sign Max Scherzer. So if Steve Cohen decides that he wants Chris Bryant, it's not my money, it's not your money, by all means, bring in Chris Bryant. It's a great player that makes your team better. But when I say that the Mets don't need Chris Bryant, that's in reference to the fact that I think they already have 8 starting level players on their team. With James McCann, we know that's going to be the catching situation. No one's campaigning for another addition there. And really, it's hard to find much when it comes to catchers anyway. Pete Alonso, Jeff McNeil, Francisco Lindor, Eduardo Escobar, and the outfield we already know, set with Nimmo, Canna, and Marte. DH, you right now still have J.D. Davis and Robinson Cano that can platoon there. You still have Dominic Smith on this team. So until they make trades to clear some of these guys, for now, I think the position player core is basically set unless they're to make a smaller signing like Jonathan Villar, or if they decide, you know what, we want Chris Bryant. And if they get Chris Bryant, maybe that leads to a further Jeff McNeil trade that will just make the team make sense altogether a little bit more. If you have Chris Bryant as your third baseman and Escobar at second, or however they want to line it up. But that is overall what I take from where the Mets are right now as they just introduced these 3 position players. It seems like the team is in pretty good shape across the board. When we get to the other end of this lockout, the thing I'm focused on more than anything is rounding out this pitching staff and maybe getting one more multifaceted player to come off the bench. If that's VR, if that is another free agent on the market, or if they dip into the trade market. And there is a trade that we're going to talk about maybe tomorrow that I think will interest Mets fans, where I might trade Jeff McNeil. I might, because it would get a player that would make this Mets team a hell of a lot better. So stay tuned for that on the final show this week. But now we should talk about Marcus Stroman, who is no longer a New York Met. So Marcus Stroman signs a 3-year, $71 million deal with the Chicago Cubs. A very interesting contract. Let's remember that Marcus Stroman, from reports at the end of the season, wanted $25 million a year for 5 or 6 years. Did not get that. He did, however, get the $25 million a year. The Cubs structure it so that the average annual value came down because of the 3rd year, which is essentially a player option. He has an opt-out after the 2nd season. He'll get $25 million a year for the first 2 years and then $21 million for the final year. But there's escalators in the contract that could get this to eventually be a 3-year, $75 million deal. Basically, if he meets 160 innings pitch, he gets a $2 million escalator. So that's going to happen for the next 2 years. If he gets 160 innings pitch this season and next season, that contract will go from $20 million or $21 million in the final year to $25 million, and then he'll decide if he wants to take that or exercise his free agency yet again. I think this is a fairly good deal for Stroman. I think he might have misplayed his market a little bit, and this is just from an outsider's perspective. I don't know what happened in those conversations, but I do know that the reporting indicated he was looking for 6 for $150. And so if that is where you're setting your bar, and you have Robbie Ray and Kevin Gausman who are shopping in the 5 for $110, $115 range, I could see how teams ultimately decided, you know, Gausman and Ray maybe have a little more upside as strikeout pitchers. And I could see how that would eventually get to the point where Marcus Stroman would be left without an offer. And maybe if he waited and signed a deal on the other side of the CBA, maybe he would have gotten closer to what he wanted. Maybe he would have got a 4th year for 100 or something along those lines. But the Cubs came to him with an offer that is really good for Marcus Stroman, because Marcus Stroman prides himself on his durability. And so he's betting on himself here. If he pitches up to his standards, this is a 2-year, $50 million deal, and he tests the market again. If he has some bad performances on the mound, but is still durable and taking the ball every 5th day and get into 160 innings pitched, he can opt into that final year and get another $25 million a year salary before he tests free agency one more time. So this is a bet on himself. His average annual value is where he wanted it to be, and we'll see how it works out for him. But certainly sad in some respects to see Marcus Stroman go. When the Mets traded for him at the deadline in 2019, it was one of the most shocking moves. And I'll tell you personally, hosting this show, that was a big turning point for me because at the time, you know, I'm grinding through this whole thing. I'm hosting the show every day and I'm not really a known commodity by any stretch. I started a Twitter when I started hosting the show. And when the Marcus Stroman trade happened, that attracted an audience to my show that carried it over. And so I do appreciate Stroman in that respect. I appreciate watching Marcus Stroman over the past couple of years. I appreciate the positive messages he's put on social media. I don't necessarily appreciate some of the negative messages, particularly that latest little dust up with Mark Carrick. That was not a good look on Stro. But overall, I think that even though he was very polarizing, I believe his intentions were mostly good. And I think by the end, he did wear out his welcome for a certain portion of the Mets fan base. I also think that he endeared himself so much to a large portion of the Mets fan base that this is really sad for a lot of people here. And his performance was great as a Met. You know, a 3.21 ERA, 44 starts, came over at the trade deadline, didn't pitch in 2020. So really, you just had this season where we got to watch him, you know, on full display. And he was an anchor for the rotation this year. And I think looking at that number, you know, 3 for 71, you could say, yeah, maybe the Mets should have brought him back. But when you invest what you invested in Max Scherzer, it's hard to also pony up and pay $25 million a year for Marcus Stroman. So I don't fault the Mets for letting Stroman go to another team. They might have burned the bridge a bit by not approaching him sooner in the offseason for kind of making it clear that he was their third or fourth option. I don't think he really appreciated that. And so that's the end of his legacy. Obviously, in retrospect, was it the best trade? Probably not. I mean, Simeon Wood Richardson is one of the best pitching prospects in baseball right now. You could still have him, but that's Brody's fault. You know, that falls into the Brody, era of Mets baseball where he was trading guys nonstop. And if he didn't trade Wood Richardson for Stroman, he might have traded him for Miguel Castro in 2020, because that's just how Brody rolls. So I'm not going to harp on the loss of Simeon Wood Richardson too much just because Stroman is now no longer a Met. But what I will say is Max Scherzer is a New York Met. That is how we're closing every single show for the time being. Can you believe that Max Scherzer is a New York Met? Anyway, that's going to be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get your daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day by following Locked On Bets wherever you get podcasts.